Good morning, I'm Nancy Barrow, and this is the Beat of Connecticut on Hot 93.7, hot93.7.com. And joining me today is an author from Connecticut, and it's Cesar Rondina, and he's the author, and he's a public speaker. And listen, the more I talk to him, the more I find out about him, and you've had like 25 lives in one life.
Pretty close.
First of all, let's just say the book that we're talking about is called A Woman's Fear. And tell me about the book and why you decided to write this book.
The book A Woman's Fear, the concept came to me simply because, as I explained to you, think of it as a bubble. And the bubble is prevention and awareness.
Okay.
And one of the reasons why there's so much domestic violence in the world today is because women are just not educated to it. That's one reason. Second reason is the human condition dictates to people that they tend to look away or ignore or not want to accept the things that scare them. So because of that, they never become aware of it. And a lot of the public speaking that I do and some of the women support groups that I work with, the one theme that I noticed is they didn't know about it. The common question was, I didn't know. No one ever told me.
Well, because sometimes I feel like in certain families, you never experience that. So if you've never experienced it or seen it and then you become part of it, it's foreign to you.
Absolutely.
You know?
And with children, as we were talking about earlier, a lot of the cases of domestic violence in the home, 22% of the children that are in that home see it. And out of that, 15% of those children actually become victims of it, because to them it almost seems like it's normal.
Yeah.
So they don't understand it. And we have a great public education system, but the problem is there's only so much that the public education system could teach you. As a society, I think we lack. We do not educate our children enough with prevention and awareness.
You told me that you were in the medical field. So let's go back and kind of like walk everybody through your history.
Well, I was born and raised in Connecticut. I raised three wonderful children. I love them dearly. But I was a career firefighter for West Haven. God, I miss it dearly. The best job I ever had. I worked with some of the best male and female firefighters in the business. Most firemen always work part-time jobs. I did. So I worked as a paramedic for a commercial ambulance service, whose name I won't mention. I did that for 28 and a half years. And I worked as a paramedic in three quarters of the state of Connecticut. Actually, in Hartford. I was in Hartford for about 2 years. During that time, I've seen it all. I've seen domestic violence so many times, child abuse so many times, and going back to the same houses so many times. You know, it's constantly a repeat performance.
So do you think the system is sort of broken and that it doesn't stop that?
The system is broken.
Yeah.
The system will do the best it can when it's reported. And one of the biggest problems with female abuse and domestic violence is many women don't report it. Far more women don't report it than do report it.
There's a shame attached to it, I think.
It is, because the woman, unfortunately, I'm not saying anything bad against attorneys, but a defense attorney's job is to defend his client. And part of that defense is going to be, in my time in the medical, pre-hospital medical field, I have been on hundreds of crime scenes. I've testified in scores of trials. And I've seen it firsthand where the woman is actually scrutinized, because the defense attorney's job is to make it look like she asked for it.
Right.
Okay. And it's not that he's a bad guy. He's doing his job.
Mm-hmm.
His job is to get his client off. So what happens is this causes women to be afraid to come forward. So most of the women don't come forward because they don't want their friends to know about it. The shame involved. They don't want their family to know about it, their children. The after effects, which most people don't realize, of what the children have to deal with when they go to school with their friends, because their mother's picture is plastered all over the newspaper.
Yeah, right.
So they don't report it.
You decide to write a book about it. It's very interesting that you would sit there and take time out and write a book about this whole situation. Was it somebody in particular that like really sat with you and you were like, I need to really tell this story. I really need to get this out here and help people.
Yes. But the way the book is geared, it starts with less traumatic stories and works up to the worst case that I had in my medical career, which is the last story of the book. That was the story that made me write the book. And I did write it years later. But what happened in all my time working in commercial ambulance, we used to have to transport women to women's shelters and so on and so forth, and obviously rape victims to the hospital. And, you know, know, I offered. I said, listen, I'd love to come in and speak to these women. You know, I've seen it firsthand. I understand what they're going through. And we started to do that. And it took quite some time for me to be accepted. I mean, when you walk as a man, when you walk into a room with 35 women that have been abused, I had to sit there and shut up and wait to be accepted.
Yeah.
And eventually that happened. And I've been doing that now for years. And after listening to these stories and my experience, I have to write about it.
So, and when you were in those support groups, that must have been an interesting dynamic that you as a man were sitting there telling what you've seen and what you've done as a first responder.
Once we started to chat, I was accepted very, very quickly because I wasn't judgmental. I understood exactly what they were going through. I mean, I've seen it in dozens of court cases where I wanted to stand up in the room and say, what are you kidding me? What are you doing to this poor woman? She's the victim.
And they get re-victimized in courts all the time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And in the public. And, and the problem is there's a stigma attached to them afterwards. And they have to live with that. I've heard stories from women that whose marriages never survived.
Yeah.
You know, 7 years later, their husband couldn't take it anymore, and they wound up in divorce. And they're the saddest stories in the world. And will it ever totally go away? No. But until someone is bold enough, and I've never been accused of not speaking my mind, until someone's bold enough to put it in writing, not the truth, but the reality. Big difference between truth and reality.
And
this book is all about reality.
So when someone picks up your book, is this for people like family members of victims, or is it for victims?
This book is for men, women, children, obviously, that are old enough to understand it.
Yeah.
So I would not recommend this book for any child under the age of 18. But, you know, men could read this book magazine and also did articles for Girl Talk HQ because I support this.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's no longer a man's world. Those days are long gone. And one of the problems society has is we're trying to rewrite history. You can't rewrite history. All you can do is write the future.
Well, I think the Me Too movement has really drawn a lot of attention to the abuses that have gone on in Hollywood and other areas of entertainment for women. And that's a reality as well.
Absolutely. So. And that's talked about in this book because if we're going to talk about truth and reality, then we have to hit it right between the eyes. Not every case is legitimate, and a lot of people are going to jump on the bandwagon, and that is part of the truth and reality that we have to face.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's 25 years after the O.J. Simpson case and with Nicole and Ron Goldman, and that was a case, I think, that really brought to light abuse, because after she got murdered, you know, the abuse that happened during that marriage came out. So I think that was a really powerful thing 25 years ago, that you saw this very successful man, a beautiful woman. It doesn't matter how much money you make or where you live. Abuse can be abuse in any social setting. It knows no boundaries.
I was always put in the not so advantageous neighborhoods because of my size.
Yeah.
Okay. But in my career, I've been shot at. I've been stabbed. I've been assaulted. I've had 13 job-related surgeries, but I loved what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it in the best of neighborhoods, and I've seen it in the worst of neighborhoods.
Yeah.
It all boils down to one word in society today, and that's respect. If you treat people with respect, you're going to get treated with respect.
Yeah, that's so true.
If you judge people, you have a problem.
I feel that this is an important book for everybody to read.
It is. And, you know, this is really primarily a book about female abuse and domestic abuse and domestic violence. But men get abused, too.
It's so true.
I'm a man, and I was in an abusive relationship, as I told you earlier.
Yeah.
The difference is men don't report it because our type of abuse is different. You know, men have this macho attitude. I'm not going to go to the police. If they go to the police, it's because they're trying to set themselves up for a divorce case that's going to work in their favor. Male abuse is completely different than female abuse. And the scariest statistic of all that we talked about actually before the show, a woman will go back to an abusive relationship 7 times before she'll finally leave it. And you have to ask yourself why. This book has about 800 hours of research into it on top of personal experience. And most people do not understand, you know, the reality of the world today is in a divorce, the man doesn't get the children, the women do.
Mm-hmm.
And most times the men gets them every other weekend. The cases of equal custody are really very, very rare. This woman has to worry about financial support, raising these children. Is her husband going to pay the child support or alimony, which in most cases they don't? So the onus is really on the woman in this case. A woman in an abusive relationship oftentimes feels stuck there. Where is she going to go? I have no money. I have these children I have to worry about. So they sit back and they take it until it gets so bad or they're beaten so bad.
Yeah, someone else steps in.
Someone else steps in.
Yeah.
And I say this a lot. I write a blog post that goes out every Monday night at 8:30, and one Monday a month is a video blog. I'm fully transparent, and I like people to see me. Just don't read me. Know who I am. Because I look at being an author as a three-sided triangle. There's first the connection between me and my book. Then there has to be the connection between my book and my reader. But the third leg that makes an author successful is if the author has a connection back to the readers. I try to be as open and transparent to my readers as possible.
Being the firefighter, and then you were first responders at all, I would imagine the burnout is pretty high.
It is. In between police, fire, and first responders, we have the highest suicide rate of all job professions. Twice in my medical career, unfortunately, and it's sad to say, but I responded to calls for suicide to find out that it was a friend of mine. We have the highest divorce rates because you're always on call, you're always working. They are not the highest paid jobs in the world.
Right.
Police officers don't make their money on their scheduled shifts. They make it on the road working all the extra jobs. Same thing with firemen.
Yeah.
Firemen will make a good pay at the end of the year if he's willing to live at the firehouse 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Marriages suffer. So the divorce rates are high. Puts a lot of stress on the family, a lot of stress on the children. And they are very difficult professions. But those of us that do it are dedicated to it.
There's something in your DNA that makes you want to be a first responder, you know?
Absolutely.
There's something special about first responders, I feel. And I don't know what it is that made you decide that you wanted to be a firefighter.
I love helping people. I love children. I adore children. And I actually had a newspaper reporter come to my house to do an interview on me, and he said, saw 15 Distinguished Service Awards on my wall. And he goes, I got to take a picture of those for the newspaper. And I said, absolutely not. He goes, well, why do you have them there? I said, I don't have them there to remind me of what I did. I have them there so I'll never forget that there's other people doing what I did. And that's what it's all about, because there's scores of men and women out there that are firefighters, paramedics, EMTs, male and female police officers. I've worked with some of the best police officers in West Haven and New Haven, male and female. I would trust my life with them 7 days a week. And I don't envy 1 minute what they have to go through, especially with the public scrutiny that they're under nowadays. And the general public has no idea what it's like to be abused yourself as an individual, 5, 6, 7 times on a call, one call after another, after another, after another, and have to be nice and respectful every single time.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult.
It is a difficult job.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
It is. And I think that's why I look at it and I'm like, the burnout must be really, really high.
But the burnout is really high. It really is.
Have you written any books about being a first responder?
Yes.
Because I know you've written a bunch of books.
I did. I wrote a book, which actually didn't do as well as I thought it was going to do, to be honest with you. It was called Who Are the Heroes? And that book was about our military, because I fully support our veterans.
Of course,
the veterans, as far as I'm, they're the 14-karat gold of our society. They've made our country what it is today.
They have.
Police officers, firefighters, and first responders. But it tells the true story of what these people actually go through. And what it tells further, Nancy, is the story after the story. Because we'll watch our favorite news channel and we'll hear about a police officer that was killed in the line of duty. And that's sad. But the side of the story you don't hear about is what my book tells, is what the family has to live with later. Especially in the military, with the benefit problems that they have. We have a broken system, and no system is going to be perfect. We're caught in a catch-22, and I understand both sides of it because I see it and I've lived it, whereas we want all of this, but yet the taxpayers can't afford any more tax burden to pay for it. So I'm not going to be one of these people that sits here and just denounces the government and says all kinds of bad things about them. They have issues they have to deal with.
Yeah,
you know,
you're
not going to keep voting for people that raise your taxes.
Especially like when you talk about those first responders, you don't make a lot of money. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't feel like you make as much money as you should as a first responder.
A large fire department in our state, the entry salary level for a firefighter who's risking his life all the time is $35,000 a year.
That's crazy.
It takes that person 5 years to get up to their maximum pay grade, which is about $67,000 a year. That firefighter may make $90,000 a year, but he's working extra shifts all the time. After my first 30 days on the job, and I was married, my kids were young, I was stuck there for 21 days straight, 7 days a week, because of book offs, paramedics getting hurt, and I was the only paramedic there at the time. All the other ones were out on injury. I didn't go home for 21 days straight.
Didn't see your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, my wife brought my kids down to the firehouse to see me. But think about that pressure and the number of calls you're doing 21 days straight, 24 hours a day. And a paramedic in West Haven does double duty. We just don't get assigned to the rescue, and we don't do structural firefighting. We do both. There's many a nights we wrapped up a fire at 2:30 in the morning, and my duty captain would say, okay, and I would have to go to a cardiac arrest covered in sop and wet in water and suit, and now resuscitate somebody. You know, I really shouldn't say this because I'm not knocking the movie industry, but they don't really depict the fire service the way it is. Backdraft was a great movie. Backdraft 2 was a great movie. The farthest thing from reality you're ever going to see. When you're a firefighter and you're going to a burning building, you could put your hand 1 inch away from your face and you can't see your own hand.
You can't see anything.
You know, and the movies can't depict it that way because there would be no movie.
Right.
There would be no drama. You know, so people really don't understand what the job is like. You don't know what it's like when you're a paramedic on an ambulance at 3:30 in the morning and you're going into a house and there's 8 family members there and grandpa, who you love to death, is having a heart attack. You're trying to save his life and you have 8 family members all over you. You know, and you have to be respectful and you want to say to him, please get the heck out of my way so I can do my job.
I don't know. What is the average span for someone staying in firefighting?
Most guys will hit 30 years.
Really?
Yeah, because most fire departments have what they call outstations, stations that aren't as busy. And once a guy hits a plateau in his career, they'll send that guy or that gal out to an outstation that's not quite as busy. So they can max out their pension at 30 years. In the commercial ambulance business, I've seen guys make it 5 years and they can't take it anymore.
Have any of your kids gone into the firefighting?
Yes, my son Michael, and I'm so proud of him. Yeah. He's a supervisor at one ambulance company and works as a paramedic as another. My daughter did some studying as a CNA in medicine in Florida. And then my oldest son went into the military.
So you've had all your kids kind of have something in common that what you've done.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I'm really proud of my son, Michael, and I'll tell you why, very quick 20-second version of it, because everybody thought, well, you know, Caesar is his father. I was a well-respected paramedic. I was an educator for 20 years teaching paramedic classes. You know, his kid's going to breeze right through. My kid didn't breeze through because I had no part of his training, nothing. I wanted no part of it. I said, you're on your own. 2 years ago, he was voted the best paramedic in New Haven.
Hey!
Of the year.
That's fantastic.
He earned it. He did it on his own. Didn't go in under his father's wing because I wanted him to learn the right way. Take the pain, take the suffering, go home crying some days because you're gonna.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell you how many times after a call I would sit in the ambulance bay in Yale and just sit there and cry like a baby because of the call I just finished.
Are there any support groups for firefighters and paramedics? I mean, for first responders, they offer you counseling?
We do. We have, every company has an employee assistance program, but I got to tell you the mentality of the people that do this, men and female. We don't ask for help, okay? We suck it up. When I got into this business and I really saw what it was like and I loved it because I was a volunteer for almost 10 years before I became a career firefighter and I just fell in love with it. But I went into it with a realistic notion. And that realistic notion was, every day I go to work, there's a chance I could get hurt. Every day I go to work, there's a chance that I may not come home. If I can't handle that, then I can't do the job. And that was my attitude. So I never experienced that burnout. I was probably one of the very few paramedics that actually stays in the commercial ambulance field for almost 29 years.
But you deliver a lot of babies.
13. Yeah. Yeah.
That's really amazing. That must have been the best part of the job.
You know, I was very, very fortunate. I had 12 normal births, and I had one very critical birth where the child was born operating with no heart rate, and we had to resuscitate it. And thank God, and I make the sign of the cross as I sit here, we were able to get the child back.
That's when your job is so satisfying. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God, yeah. You know, there's parts of the job, and there's things that you see that no person should ever see. I've seen things that when my son told me he wanted to get into this, I tried everything I possibly could to talk him out of it.
Right.
Because you have no, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you grotesque stories, but yeah. I'm going to tell you there's things that no human being should ever see.
No, I can't
imagine.
And you see
them.
Yeah. So you know, writing that book that you said wasn't very successful about that, was it therapeutic for you to write that book? I mean, that you're an author and you love to write. I mean, you've written how many books now?
12.
12 books. Okay, so that book you said was not as successful as you thought it would be. But was it therapeutic for you? Was it sort of therapy for you?
It was. Yeah. It was kind of a form of therapy for me because I was angry. First of all, no one wants to be called an ambulance driver. If you want to insult any first responder, call them an ambulance driver. I went to school to be a paramedic, as long as a physician assistant goes to school to be a physician assistant. So it's 2 years. You're not alone working as a paramedic, maybe 2 years and 3 months before you're totally on your own. And you have to be cleared by a doctor. That ambulance driver has the responsibility of his life, his partner's life, and a patient's life.
Mm-hmm. So writing that book was sort of therapeutic for you.
It was very therapeutic for me. It allowed me to get some of my anger out, to be mm-hmm. quite honest with
yeah.
you. And it allowed me to bring a side to this to the public that they just don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't hold it against the public because they don't know. They're not educated.
Right.
You know, it's funny. You watch a news story, and I see it all the time, and I actually laugh about it now. And they'll say, the fire department did this, the fire department did that. And yeah, the fire department did. But what about the ambulance people that got that patient to the
yeah.
hospital? This is a team effort. It's the police, it's the ambulance, it's the fire department. No one entity does it all on their own.
So if anybody wants to get any of your books, where are they all on Amazon?
Every one of my books is on Amazon.com. Barnes & Noble, almost all my books, my whole murder mystery trilogy is in audiobooks.
And you have another book that just came out.
Yep, the third book of my murder mystery trilogy, Life Through a Mirror, just came out two days ago. All three of those are in audiobooks, which are available on Audible.com as well as Amazon. My love story coming out when two worlds collide in September is also going to be on all major bookstores. So you get my books.
You're busy, man. You're a busy man.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, though. I love it.
I love it. And so if you want to get Caesar's books, his last name is R-O-N-D-I-N-A, Rondino. So make sure that you go to Amazon, get his books. We're out of time. I could have talked to you for a long time, Caesar. You're a real fascinating guy. So
Nancy, this was great. I had such a great time.
Well, thank you. And if you want to pick up A Woman's Fear, you know you can do that as well on Amazon. I'm Nancy Barrow. This is The Beat of Connecticut on Hot 93.7, hot93.7.com. Have a great Sunday.